and the train keeps on a rolling.
All night long.
Hi, and welcome to American Hit Radio on 90.3 WHPC. I'm Tom Ryan with my lovely wife, Heidi Morales Ryan. We're here every Wednesday and Friday between 5 and 6 p.m. On Fridays, we've been doing a whole series that we call How Music Changed, one of the more ambitious projects, I think, that we've come up with regarding trying to convey the history of music, really, from beginning to end in segmented topics. We have 250 topics that cover a broad range, of course, of different styles in music and history. And we're trying to get in, you know, go as deep as we can on them. The longer the series went on, the more we realized that we had to go deep. The part that we are on now, it's actually part 151 out of the 250.
Look at us rolling right along.
But this is called Transistor Days. And so far, we have done 43 shows. Today's show is number 44. The point of Transistor Days is to cover pop music during the transistor radio era. So we started in 1955, which also happened to coincide with the birth of rock and roll. And we're going to take it up right to the end of the 60s, before FM radio started to kick in and change things. So we are choosing our favorite hit singles, because that's what AM radio mostly consisted of at that point in time. And all of the songs are songs that have been actually chosen from my first published book called American Hit Radio. So in a sense, this whole series could be called American Hit Radio Part 1, since we're going from 1955 to 1969. But as I said, we started in January of 1955, and now with Part 44, we find ourselves at the winter of 1967, which is to say the very end of 1966, November, December into January. And if we thought 1966 couldn't be beat, I mean, we just spent about 8 shows covering just 1966, and one show was better than the next. As far as pop music, it was a tough year to beat. But 1967 tends to, like, continue to raise the ante. The year of the Summer of Love had a winter that preceded that legendary season, and already there was something in the air. Incredible soul music continued to flow from both the North and South of the United States, and the United States adequately proved that it was not only capable of meeting the British invasion, at this point in time, surpassing it handily. Mm-hmm. Diversity was a key to the quality of the times, and I think that the songs in this particular program will prove that. One of the most telling changes was a band that was not really a band at all, but a figment of a couple of TV producers' imaginations. The band was called The Monkees, of course. The Monkees were created as a fake American Beatles, really just to basically propel a television show. But their first hit single, which we played a couple of weeks back, Last Train to Clarksville, was pretty darn good, and it sold incredibly well. So it began to, like, beg the question about what came first, the chicken or the egg, the TV show or the music, that sort of thing, you know? And The Monkees' second single, which was written by Neil Diamond, was a two-sided hit with the punk garage rock song, I'm Not Your Stepping Stone, on the flip side. And the younger audience that watched the TV show and heard the group's first hit, Last Train to Clarksville, bought the A-side, I'm a Believer, by the millions. The corresponding album, More of the Monkees, received advance orders of 1.5 million copies.
Wow.
Higher than
solid
any.
Solid gold.
Right? Higher than any previous Beatles or Elvis LP.
Wow.
The album went from number 124 to number 1 within a week of its release. Like the first single, Last Train to Clarksville, lead vocals were once again performed by Mickey Dolenz, who was beginning to prove himself to be more than an adequate singer. He was an actor who was learning to become a rock star.
Awesome.
Interestingly, the success of I'm a Believer inspired Neil Diamond to further his own singing career.
Huh.
So there you go. Neil has not had any big hits of his own as of yet. Well, that will change very shortly.
Right.
On American Net Radio, 90.3 WHPC, here's both the A and the B side of the Monkees' second hit single, the A side being I'm a Believer, on American Radio, 90.3 WHPC.
Only true in fairy tales, then for someone else, but not for me. Our love was out to get me, that's the way it seemed. Disappointment haunted all my dreams. Then I saw her face, now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love, I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried. I thought love was more or less a given thing. Seems the more I gave, the less I got. What's the use in trying? All you get is pain. When I needed sunshine, I got rain. Oh, then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love. I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Not a trace of doubt in my mind. I'm in love. I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried. Yes, I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. I'm down in my mind, and I'm a believer. Yeah, 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 yeah. I'm a believer. And I'm a believer. Yeah, I'm a believer. And I'm a believer.
I'm not your stepping stone. You're using all the tricks that you used on me. You're reading all them high fashion magazines. The clothes you're wearing, girl, are causing public scenes. I said, I'm not just stepping stones. I'm not just stepping stones. Not just stepping stones. Girl, you didn't have no shoes, but now you're walking around like your front page news. You've been awful careful about the friends you choose, but you won't find my name in your book of who's. Who's I said, I'm not your stepping stone. Just stepping stone. I'm not just stepping stone.
You know, that was, for its time, that was a pretty tough recording. I mean, it was garage rock, punk rock.
It's still awesome.
It still sounds great.
I love it,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, it takes a considerably harder tack than the other Monkees hits, that's for sure. Mickey Dolan sings with more than a hint of anger in his voice. And although he possessed limited vocal abilities, he delivers a convincing performance, spewing lines like, "When I first met you, girl, you didn't have no shoes. Now you're walking around like you're front page news." Another Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart song, the same guys that wrote Last Train to Clarksville, and later Valerie. But it gave the Monkees a much-needed bit of credibility with older rock fans by virtue of its toughness. Now, from there, from Hollywood, let's move all the way down to New Orleans.
I mean, yes, please.
I don't know if he's your favorite, though, but well, you tell me. But before Aaron Neville became everybody's duet darling, those who knew of him considered him the most soulful singer in New Orleans' funkiest band. While the Neville brothers laid down some truly nasty contrapuntal rhythms, it was Aaron Neville's melisma-drenched voice that would float over the syncopations like an angel who got lost on the way to heaven. His one big hit single, Tell It Like It Is, was recognized as one of the finest soul songs of the 60s. All four of the Neville brothers, Art, Aaron, Charles, and Cyril, have been struggling for continued widespread commercial success for so long that it is misanthropic of me to begrudge Aaron of his little window of popularity. I've picked on him a lot because of all the duets that he's done and that angelic way of singing. I'd seen him live once, and he broke into Anne Murray's song, You Needed Me. And I was like, my jaw dropped. Like, what?
Dumbfounded.
What? And there was a guy sitting in the gospel, the tent where he was performing, who I didn't know at all. And he leaned over to me and he said, like, "What's next? I Am Woman?" I had to leave. I had to leave the tent.
Sorry.
I had to walk out. But be it as it may, Tell It Like It Is remains a crowning achievement for the Neville brothers, or at least for Aaron Neville. And odds are good that it will remain their most requested song for as long as they're able to continue to make music. On American Radio, 90.3 WHPC, here's Aaron Neville with Tell It Like It Is.
If you want something to play with, go and find yourself a toy. Baby, my time is too expensive, and I'm not a little boy. If you are serious, don't play with my heart, it makes me furious. But if you want me to love you, then a baby I will. Girl, you know I will. Tell it like it is. Don't be ashamed. Let your conscience be your guide. But I know deep down inside of me, I believe you love me. Forget your foolish pride. Life is too short to have sorrow. You may be here today and gone tomorrow. You might as well get what you want. So go on and live. Baby, go on and live. Tell it like it is.
I'm nothing to play with. Go and find yourself a toy. But I'll tell it like it is. My time is too expensive, and I'm not your little boy.
Something interesting happens in the song order this week. Now, I do not arrange the song order to suit my own tastes.
History does.
I have two things that determine the exact order. The first thing is the month of the song's release. So it's strictly chronological. Then, if you've got a lot of songs that are released in the same month, I just arrange them by chart position. The higher the number, meaning number one would come first, followed by number two, followed by number three, if they were all, say, in December of 1966. Well, that's where we are right now, December of 1966. And the two songs that I'm going to play charted at number six and number eight, respectively. And it's an interesting coincidence because they are the two biggest male vocal bands from Motown, back-to-back with releases, competing releases. And it's not just a competition between the Four Tops and the Temptations. It's also a bit of a competition between their producers. As we had mentioned in earlier shows, the writing and production team of Lamont Dozier and the brothers Eddie and Brian Holland were more than adept at helping Berry Gordy run his photocopy service when a song hit it big. And Standing in the Shadows of Love was their very deliberate and successful attempt at writing Reach Out Again, I'll Still Be There. And after this became a hit, they wrote Bernadette, which was, if you keep on reaching out, I'll keep on being there. Or Standing in the Shadows of Our Last Hits. I mean, as long as records were selling, Berry Gordy was going to make sure that the product was there. So, three decades removed from its inception, though, the song Standing in the Shadows of Love has certainly taken on an identity all of its own. Meanwhile, The Temptations and their producer, Norman Whitfield, had taken over from Smokey Robinson, and he is on fire with the band. His second production for them was a number one hit on the R&B charts, reached number eight on the pop charts, just two positions in back of Holland, Dozier, Holland, which must have miffed him because everything was about competition.
Oh, yeah,
at Motown.
For sure. Big time.
Eventually, the song was picked up by Rare Earth, who put out a 10-minute long version of the song, and Rod Stewart, who recorded this awesome version on the best album of his career, Every Picture Tells a Story. But here is the original version by The Temptations. Up first, The Four Tops with Standing in the Shadows of Love, followed by The Temptations with I Know I'm Losing You on American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHPC.
Standing in the Shadows of Love. So don't you leave me standing in the shadows of love. I'm getting ready for the heartache to come. Don't you see me standing in the shadows of love. Trying my best to get ready for the heartache to come. All alone I'm destined to be with misery, my only company. It may come today and it might come tomorrow. For sure, I ain't got nothing but sin.
could not deny. I'm standing in the shadows of love. I'm getting ready for the heartaches to come. Don't you see me standing in the shadows of love? Trying my best to get ready for the heartaches to come. Oh, I'm standing in the shadows. Controls your very soul. I fool myself long as I can feel the presence of another man. It's there when you speak my name. It's just not the same. Of a face I see, I'm hurt, downhearted, and worried, girl, 'cause that face doesn't belong to me. Oh, it's all over your face. The one's taking my place. Ooh, ooh, baby, I'm losing you. You try hard to hide the emptiness inside. Ooh, I can tell I'm losing you.
Back
Don't
to back
worry,
hits.
Baby. You're not losing me.
It's only a song. But pretty damn good ones.
Pretty intense.
Yeah, just as, like, you know, 1966 is ending, Motown is not showing any sign of letting up. If anything, they're digging in deeper. They have made such a deep impression. I mean, the Supremes are staying, well, with Diana Ross, mostly, of course, but because the rest of the poor girls, the other two girls were probably already doing anything. But there was so much happening all over the place out of Motown. And with the male groups, they were obviously holding their own as well. So it was pretty stunning. But I was talking about coincidences with the fact that those two songs came back to back and their chart position. It happens again now, but now we go to the South. We're still in December of 1966. So we played Standing in the Shadows of Love, which was number 6. I Know I'm Losing You, which is number 8. But now we move to the South. And at number 23, we have Wilson Pickett with Mustang Sally. Imagine that song when he went to number 23. Wow. It's a song that we can't even get rid of if we wanted to. We can't shake it out of our hair. And yet it only went to number 23. And just behind it, again, two positions just behind it, is Otis Redding with Try a Little Tenderness.
Nice. Now,
again, it's competition, though, you see, because Wilson Pickett had been at Stax Records, and they kind of got tired of his comeuppance. He was just too difficult to work with. So they just let him go. And he ended up going over to Fame and Stax. And it was at Stax where he left Stax. Yes, I'm sorry. And then he ended up going to Muscle Shoals, which is where he became famous on Atlantic Records. And Atlantic is now pushing Wilson Pickett's career at this point in time. It's very confusing. That's why I get confused. I did that whole show about trying to break up all those. And even I still get confused. Meanwhile, Otis Redding was the star performer for Stax. He stayed. He was very easy to work with, a pleasure. Everybody loved him.
They were only down the road from each other.
Well, not too far. Yeah. You know, very, very close. It was
reasonable.
Very reasonable. Wouldn't want to walk it, but no. You could
but
easily.
The advent of the automobile did a lot.
You could, right. You could commute it in the 60s. It would have been very easy. Now, Atlantic Records' Jerry Wexler called Wilson Pickett the Black Panther before the phrase had any political connotation, but Wicked Pickett was the name that stuck, and for good reason. I mean, judging by both his music and his image, he was a prime example of just how much black music had changed since the mid-50s. The image of the downtrodden, self-obsessed blues man who sang of secular, if not outright sinful concerns, was modified over time into this mid-60s soul man. The soul man was a proud and politically astute individual with a newfound sense of self-worth, and that definitely explained Wilson Pickett.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps it was a little too late, but it was still something. And there can be no denying that soul music played a significant role in affecting a change in American culture. There's no doubt about it. The brilliant stuttering guitar riff played by Chips Moman, by the way, of American Studios, also sort of in that same general vicinity, provides enough drive to propel the song all by itself. But the bass and drums of Tommy Cogbill, what a stunning bass player,
yeah,
and Roger Hawkins, stunning drummer, sound like they're prepared to challenge Sally and her brand new Mustang to a drag race. Meanwhile, since we're playing them back to back, Otis Redding, just by existing, personified the very meaning of soul. He fancied himself a country boy through and through. This earthiness gave him the character he needed to sing with enough raw, honest emotion to touch every person within earshot. Redding had a pleading vulnerability that instantaneously enraptured his audience, and never was it more obvious than on this song, Try a Little Tenderness. The song dates back to 1933, and by 1966 was considered to be little more than a old, hoary old standard. Redding and company captured a performance that is simply unrepeatable. You can decide who wins the soul battle here, but this is a battle royal between Wilson Pickett and Otis Redding on American Hit Radio 90.3 WHPC.
Oh, she may be weary. Them young girls, they do get wearied wearing that same old shaggy dress. Yeah, yeah. But when she gets weary, try a little tenderness. You know she's waiting, just anticipating for things that she'll never, 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 never possess. Yeah, yeah. But while she's there waiting, and without them, try a little tenderness. That's all you gotta do. It's not just sentimental, no, no, no. She has her grief and care. But the soft words, they all spoke so gentle, yeah. It makes it easier, easier to bear, yeah. You won't regret it, no, no. Young girls, they don't forget it.
All right, so a couple of questions are begging to be asked here. Just out of curiosity, Heidi, who do you pick, Four Tops or Temptations?
Wow, I don't know. It's so hard. I guess, are you making me, I have to pick one?
No, I don't know. If if you asked me, I wouldn't pick. I'm just wondering if you had like a clear answer.
Four Temps.
You would pick the Four Tops?
No, Four Temps.
Oh, the Four Temps. Good for you, yeah. Good. Okay, then. Same question. Wilson Pickett or Otis Redding?
Oh, it's impossible.
It's just not, right? It's not apples and oranges. It's definitely apples and apples. But it's not easy. Sometimes I'm in the mood for Otis. I consider him to be like laid back and yet still intense, emotionally intense. And Wilson Pickett, like driving me out of my mind, makes me want to speed.
Granny Smith.
it's just, well, there you go. Back to back. We had two like very interesting comparisons. We could continue this in a sense. Now that we are officially in January of 1967, when the rest of the songs from this, going forward in the show have debuted on the pop charts in 1967. And we have an American pop hit that went to number one, followed by an English pop hit that also made the top 10, but stopped at number 7. Let's talk about the American pop hit first, and we'll just play it by itself. The song is sung by lead singer Dennis Tufano, who was the lead singer of the Buckinghams. And the song is rather oddly titled Kind of a Drag. Sounds like, I had to, get up, at 8:30 instead of 9 o'clock, kind of a drag, it makes it sound like it's not a big deal. But listen to this now. Just tell me if you even recognize this. Listen to me when I'm speaking, 'cause you know the words I'm thinking, and I know that you've been cheating. Oh, I hope that you'll be weeping. No, I don't have the wrong song. Those are the words that are buried underneath the main phrase. Whenever he is like gets to the chorus and sings the main phrase, they repeat that underneath him 3 times in rapid succession. So it goes by so fast that you don't catch that this song is not about being kind of a drag. It's about pure misery.
Aww.
And the happy sound of the music obviously contradicts the miserable topic of the lyrics. So maybe you'll hear it from a different... Listen deep to see if you can pick up those words as the Buckinghams sing Kind of a Drag on American Radio 90.3 WHBC.
Kind of a drag when your baby don't love you. Kind of a drag when you know she's been untrue.
They come in such rapid succession.
It's hard.
After 50 years, I wouldn't have known it if I didn't look it up and say, what are they saying back there? What is all that? It's much sadder than that. It's more than kind of a drag, no doubt. Okay, so if that's the American pop charts, what's happening on the British pop charts? Well, Spencer Davis Group, I've got a question. If Stevie Winwood played the band's most recognizable instrument, the organ, and he sang lead vocal, and he wrote almost all of their hit material, why was it called the Spencer Davis Group? Right? Good question, right? When he joined, here's the reason. Steve Winwood was basically nothing more than a little kid who played keyboards fairly well. His older brother, Muff, played bass in the band and was also like the leader of a jazz band before he joined Spencer Davis. Davis did play guitar and he sang, and he was like standing front and center when Stevie Winwood joined. It was Davis who hired drummer Pete York, and Pete York gave the nod to let Muff's kid brother sign on as well. Stevie Winwood was 15 years old.
Wow.
When he joined the Spencer Davis Group. When this song was recorded, he was maybe 16 at this point. He wrote the song, but I mean, obviously his role in the band changed almost. He played guitar as well as piano and organ. He became the chief songwriter, and he almost always sang lead. And there's very few songs that are, I mean, think Ray Charles and imagine if you're a 16-year-old boy from England, your chances of being able to emulate Ray Charles. It's hysterically, it's almost a stupid thing. It's so ridiculous that you'd say, oh my God, how embarrassing to even try. I would probably, under 99% of circumstances where somebody would attempt to do that, it would be a great miss. Stevie Winwood was not a great miss. He was a stunning talent. And this is where we came to learn of his existence. With the Spencer Davis Group singing lead, call it Stevie Winwood, but it's in truth, it's the Spencer Davis Group performing Give Me Some Lovin' on American Radio 90.3 WHPC. We've got three songs left to go, and this is, we talked about diversity when we started. Well, here's a great example. This is a song that was written by Joe Zawinul, who was like the founder of Weather Report. He found the band Weather Report, and what's funny about it is that this song was actually a hit by the Buckinghams, who did kind of a drag. They did their own version of it, but this is the jazz version as it was intended to be when Joe wrote it, by Cannonball Adderley, who was a fabulous player that played with Miles Davis as well, played sax with Miles Davis, and ended up with an awesome live hit of the song entitled Mercy, Mercy, Mercy,
Mercy.
On American Radio 90.3 WHPC.
You know, Sometimes we're not prepared for adversity. When it happens, sometimes we're caught short. We don't know exactly how to handle it when it comes up. Sometimes we don't know just what to do when adversity takes over. And I have advice for all of us. I got it from our pianist, Joe Zawinul, who wrote this tune. And it sounds like what you're supposed to say when you have that kind of problem. It's called Mercy. 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 Mercy, 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 mercy.
All right, with the time we got left, we got two songs to play, so we could just like drop them in right now. First is times are changing. It's 1967, so we get a band called the Electric Prunes. Even they knew that the name was stupid, but they knew that nobody would forget it. And of course, it's a killer psychedelic track called I Had Too Much to Dream Last Night.
Yes.
And we get to compare that to an instrumental track by Bob Crewe, who was the guy who was like doing all the writing for the Four Seasons. And this is the first song that he put out under his own name, inspired by a Pepsi commercial. And he calls it Music to Watch Girls By.
Yeah.
Great way to end the show. On American Radio 90.3 WHPC. Now you know why I'm excited about 1967. See you next week. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
I'm not ready to face the light. I had too much to drink.